Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Welcome, After Buzzers. You are watching the After Show for Succession, Season 2, Episode 9, DC, where tonight we talk a Roman holiday, Rhea out, and Kill Bill. Stay tuned for more.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome back, Succession superfans. We are back. We got a full panel. I am joined by my lovely co-host, Mrs. Thelma and Bezoe Daniel.
I am so happy to be here. Still miss for now.
Yes. Mr. Ryan Nilsson, head of Popcorn Talk.
There are no NRPIs on this panel. We here for you.
Exactly.
Talk Succession, DC.
Yes, and I'm your host again, Shaka Smith. Excited for you guys to be back. We got so much to talk about. Of course, we have our news, our predictions, our savage lines, and our flex moments to go over with you guys. Our flex moment is where we pick a character moment that really kind of bossed up. And of course, our savage lines, we highlight some of the crazy lines of this episode, as they always have crazy lines every episode. But let's get into your overall thoughts, guys.
You know what? Speaking of crazy lines, I think my overall thought is just summed up in what Carl said. Just watching this episode, full disclosure right now, I'm sitting here, but I'm having a panic attack. Yeah. That was my mood the entire episode. So I feel like that's my overall thought.
This was, yet again, incredible episode. I was, too, having a panic attack. At one point, I was under the table. They're falling apart in these interviews. So intense, and just a crazy cliffhanger to end on. Cannot wait to predict about that. But, yeah, at the end of the day, you just got to kill Bill.
Yeah, right? Yeah, for me, it was the same way where we didn't have any direction. I didn't know which way the wind was going to blow because we had these external forces that seemed greater than the Roys. Mm. So I was just anxious. Like, what's going to happen? How do they react? But we got to get into Kill Bill, this whole strategy. And, you know, they kick it off. We get the whistleblower. James Weasel. We get the whistleblower. Mm-hmm. And it looks like this is going to be a real issue for them, and they got to go have congressional hearings. What did you think about them having to deal with the pressure of congressional hearings versus, you know, the legal route and having to maybe face criminal charges?
I think it was really important because, like they said, it's a stage. Yeah. So a lot of time, those optics are important. Mm-hmm. It's really about having those lines that can really stick with people. And I think, though it was a bad choice, in my opinion, the way it started off, I feel like we did have people come in, like Kendall, who really gave those one-liners that will work for a general public.
Yeah.
I thought so funny just all the prep work that goes into this, how he's paying 50 people to watch that initial interview in another room and then all the prep time. We didn't get to see, but Tom just, again, asking over and over again, prep me. And like, you're set. We spent all these hours on it, and still he felt like he got blindsided from all angles. Really intense, and just, you know, we know the truth. So we know who's susceptible to what, and just everything with Greg and Tom was so cringy because you feel like they're just about to get found out any second. And really fascinating, because I get that this happens in real life, and all the prep that goes into this is what they have to do,
and the anxiety of everyone in that room to want someone else's head to roll, because how did they not say no? Tom should not be the one to be up there.
That was the issue I was having, because even after all the prep, everything that went on, and we've seen this happen in real life, you know, with companies like Facebook, and it was really great to kind of get behind the door to kind of see how some of these issues might actually play out. But I feel like there wasn't enough transparency with one another, because for you to want to send Tom out there, that was, to me, was not the best choice.
Just the history of knowing Tom. Like, you know,
and his ability to fumble everything. Yeah.
Like, if I were in that room, I probably would have had very little to say except for not Tom. Like, I'd have been like, whoa, that's insane.
30 emails where you called him Mo. I never called him Mo.
Yeah. But I also think that it was one of those things where everyone's so nervous for it not to be them, because Ray even said that they look scared. So I feel like at that point, maybe they weren't really thinking.
They were just happy.
They were just like, okay, it's not me, I'm not going. So that's fine. Because we even saw that with Jerry. She testified with Tom, and even the times where Kendall stepped in, she never said anything. It was like, just whatever, I don't want it on me.
Yeah.
And it was no immediate blood relatives to first testify. That's why the ending was so fascinating, where he's like, we gotta make a blood sacrifice. But I think, Tom, definitely interesting choice. He had one of the most, I think, he was talked about most on TV beforehand. So yeah. I think that was their rationale to why they chose him to go in. Yeah. Like, you had so much talk about on airtime.
And he's the head of right, cruises at this particular time.
But anyone knowing Tom. It feels like there was probably another conversation. Well, if Tom screws up, it'll be all right because we can pin it on him too. Mm. And it feels like there was an extra conversation that we missed.
That definitely was foreshadowed in the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Now Tom got grilled pretty hard, and something, you know, I think we forget the human touch to what's actually happening. So we have this term called NRPIs. What's your reaction, Ryan, to that? Just hearing that term in relationship to this company and what that actually means in this world.
Well, I mean, obviously, when they define it and they go, "Oh, this is essentially a prostitute."
Yeah, migrant workers or sex workers. Yeah.
Right. And that if they went overboard, it might have been considered a stowaway when you refer to someone like that, when no, in fact, it was an employee.
Yeah.
And so that really disturbing, obviously. What's really troubling is it connecting everything from season one with Tom shredding these documents, sending Greg, like it's all coming to a head. And we know all the bad logistics. And even, I forget the actor's name, but who played his predecessor. He comes back, Bill? Like they got the and just coming in and him finding out all this out. I thought that, I mean, it was disturbing because that's probably how they cover this up paperwork wise in real life. And also to think like you don't know how many were actual stowaways or were actual employees that they got rid of.
And I love that it kind of highlighted that tension between corporate culture and, like, I guess morality, really, because it's in the best interest for the corporation, and as a shareholder you want what's in the best interest for the corporation to keep this under wraps, but as a human being it's sort of like we're taking these lives for granted.
No, I absolutely see that. I think on one level we see people who are trying to downplay it even within themselves. Yeah. And I think that even calling like Rhea Prim and things along those lines, you can have people like Shiv and say, "Oh, you get it," but I think there's even that underlying of like, this is not okay.
Yeah.
So I feel like we look at some of the conversations that happened today as tactic, but I think there's such an underlying truth to that, because at the end of the day, Bill knows what he did. He knew it was nice, but you're a little too nice. You know what I mean? So I feel like you already have an idea what's to come out, and you are very instrumental in making all this happen. So for people like Jerry to say, "Oh, he handled it without telling us the particulars," that was his job.
Yeah. And I love we get Bill coming. Just, "Oh, I just want to support the family." We knew Bill. He knows.
And he has the diaries. That was like a very like slick threat. He was like, "I have the diaries." And that's when, you know, like, it kind of like shifted away. Like, Bill's not going to be enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not going to go easily.
It was so funny at the beginning when they run into him and he's just like, "Thought I'd show up." Yeah. Nice guy.
Support the family.
Yeah. Gotta kill him.
Oh, wow. Kill Bill. Bye, Bill.
Yeah, you don't suit up for the game, but you came here, you come and play.
But that also like speaks to your point, right? That corporation versus human. Like, you have great relationships with him, but now you're willing to.
Yeah, and that
several
was,
times.
Yeah, because even when he turned around, they said, "But still, we still got to go. We got to kill Bill." No matter what happens, Bill's going down.
So funny.
And then we got to talk about, so after that performance, which I was like, maybe they just end the episode now, we had some redemptive performance by Kendall and Logan. What did you think about that moment where, for me, it was clear Logan threw Kendall under the bus and said, "Let's see how you handle this." Where he said, I didn't handle that part. That was the entertainment division, you know. Did you feel him throwing Kendall under the bus?
I felt he was passing it off. And maybe Kendall is the person who's supposed to answer this. I think Logan could have answered it too. So obviously I just don't think he wanted to. I think he wanted to avoid all questioning in that area as possible. But I think, you know, Kendall, as brilliant as he is, can pull a fast one like that. And I think Kendall even kind of brought some of that in. He might have planned to say that anyway, but the thing is, it might not have been enough, like he said, to the shareholders.
But Kendall was shocked.
I did get that. And I think that it was, again, one of those testers, right? Because we're trying to see, we've seen this happen in episodes before where it's, okay, Kendall, come along. What was the purpose behind that? And I think this was a redemptive moment for Kendall. Because the last time we saw him on the spot and really tested in a way where it's like, where do you stand? He fumbled that.
Yeah.
So I think that right now it's going to be, perhaps I'll save this for predictions, but it's definitely going to tie back to the money being dropped off.
Yeah. And I think Logan was saying this is a reminder that I'm the king. The whole point of shielding certain information from people is that as you go up the ladder, there's more and more deniability.
Mm-hmm. He said, "I'm not going to argue with Emerson. It is a shadow of me."
Yeah.
Like,
but
I
don't know.
Person.
But I don't know anything. So that would be the guy to speak to the details.
Yeah.
So I love that savvy from him.
Yeah, he'll turn over on a dime if he gets any type of way. If he's threatened in a way, he will trade anyone.
And I think that's really important to know, because it even brings us back to when, you know, Rhea Holly Hunter was talking about, it must be a superpower to be able to lie to someone's face but still be plausible. And like, then I'm doubting myself. Like, you're telling me the sky is green and I believe you. Like, and that is the power of Logan.
Yes, the power of Mr. Roy. But we did get a nice little meltdown moment. Poor Greg. Greg's been through it.
I just passed $250 million.
Yeah. He got this hard choice to make. He says, okay, I'm going to throw in with Logan. And then, boom, before he knows it, he's up there and he starts to melt down. What did you guys think of Greg's meltdown? And later we got to revisit predictions. Can Greg go further? Because he's losing it.
The meltdown started in the seat when he said his name.
The little camera.
Just in the background.
He was like, oh my God, this is the moment.
I thought he was going to say something that moment.
He couldn't breathe. And I feel like anybody, any political pundit watching that and, like, you know, just dissecting that C-SPAN of viewing would have been like, what's going on here? His face was fluttered. But I think it's an opportunity for Greg right now, because this is the most I've seen direct interaction between him and Logan. Mm-hmm. And I really, bringing it back to my prediction, I really feel like Greg is headed to the top.
Well, I don't know about that.
If he can handle this,
because his fingerprints are literally on those boxes, and they know his name.
But what if he gives he gives those boxes to somebody? You know, so it's more important. Now we have leverage to use to plant it on who we want. So it can work both ways.
But as of now, his hand is like in the cookie jar. And it's like, which way to go?
Was his reaction in the background of the court scene better, or was Connor?
Because that was my next question.
Connor was like the audience. Bump. He was us. Like, yes.
Yeah, like, he's just saying everything after Logan finishes. He's just like.
Yeah, that's why I want to see the Twitter feed of what Connor's reactions, because, like, people would, in real time, people would have been like, Connor's the guy in the back.
Wow. Yeah. This is audible reactions were incredible.
They were.
Well, hopefully you guys are having great reactions to us, and we hope you guys are enjoying us in the chat room. And
always enjoying us in the chat room. As you know, you can tune in to our sci-fi channel, reality channel, drama, comedy, whatever you love. But you know, AfterBuzz is the ESPN of TV sports, and we really, of TV talk, look at me, as we're talking right now, we love that you're always tuned in with us. So stay tuned in, hit us up on the chat, on the snap, and also in the chat, and we'll be sure to reach out to you.
5-star review, guys. We will shout you out on air. Yes. We're here for you.
Yeah, exactly. On Spotify and iTunes. Look at us.
Yes, we appreciate it, guys. We appreciate the love. Hopefully love, right?
Big love.
And now we got to talk a little bit about our Roman Holiday. Roman, he's always one of my favorite characters, but this one, he really found himself in a pickle. But I do love that Logan was tasked, that Roman was tasked with something by Logan as a central member of the family. He's still kind of in the running.
Right.
What did you think about Logan giving him that responsibility?
Again, I think that Logan is now starting to see some of the strengths within his children that he hasn't seen in the past. Mm-hmm. And maybe it took, you know, Rhea, whoever else kind of pointed it out, to give that to him. But I do feel like no matter how ridiculous Roman is, there is a likability there. Yeah. So there's a lot of truth to that. Yeah. So I'm really excited to see him kind of step up to the plate. I think, like, in the middle of the episode, I was like, step up, do it. Let's see what you got. So I was really excited to see that. Like, let's see you do something.
Because Logan kind of gave him that pep talk, like, I think you can do it. Let's see what you can do. Yeah.
You did say that, because I think this confirmed that he has a lot of confidence, but he's never really gone all out on something to this magnitude. Like, this is a big deal that he needs to put together. He needs to put in place and confirm, and it's a lot of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And he even is unsure of himself for it. Yeah. But since his dad's asking him, he's going to go do it.
And of all the kids, I think he literally has the most difficult task, because he's dealing with foreign people with different motivations on their land, which we see does come to play out, you know, in this dangerous situation where he doesn't know, he's got no footing, you know?
It's just savvy.
Yeah, and it really is very savvy. But a moment for me within all of that was just, like, as dehumanizing as the things that he says are sometimes, he still has this core where he's like, but are you okay, dad? So I think that that kind of plays into how he connects with people, and his ability to still be connected to people, and his strength in kind of handle this deal with Edward.
Even the security guard, I know that was for his protection, but where's Dave?
I need him right now. Exactly.
And just to talk himself out of these situations, he's like Jack Sparrow in that way. He can just get out of these crazy situations with just his words.
Great reference.
I
But I think Jack Sparrow's got more like intentionality. Yeah, right.
I mean, but I just me trying to picture any other one of the Roy kids in that situation, they would have like overplayed their hand
or gotten shot.
Yeah, or just tried to run the whole situation. Yeah. So I think just being the third and being the last born, and there are a lot of things where he's never really had a lot of control. So being in a situation where he has no control, it's like, okay, well, I'm used to this.
Yeah. He was like a lot of questions, though. I need to know what's happening play by play.
And he's so uncomfortable, even when he's at the soccer game and he has to give the pep talk. Yeah.
It's Did he even know the right name of the team? Did he even know if his hips, hearts?
Doesn't matter. But he didn't even know what to say. He even says that to Laird when he's walking out. But that's the thing, is it's not necessarily whether he is the right person for the job, if he knows the most.
Yeah.
He's just so great. He can talk himself out of things and make these deals. And at the end of this episode, we see that where he's like, hey, we might just go to these other hostages. We could get around here. Like that, it's so clever. And that's what makes him such an awesome character.
Agreed.
And we see, you know, Jerry's got that other side of it. You know, they're kind of a nice little balance. She was so serious in that hearing and she really got to the brass tacks, even though Tom messed up. But what I thought was so funny was how he tried to cover up his little relationship with Jerry.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, Jerry, disgusting, hot, but disgusting.
You'd marry her?
What?
Episode.
Yeah. You're obsessed.
But that was almost for me like a confirmation that
this
is real.
This is real. Oh, me too. I really liked the him and Jerry thing. Yeah. And then just hearing like, okay, maybe we shouldn't repeat that, what Logan said about him having like issues with older women.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, ding, ding, ding. So it's like, we have to unpack that.
Yeah.
But I just think that, like we just said, I think he does a good job of using, again, honesty as a weapon. I think that makes him more appealing when he's like, I really don't know, and I'm not trying to hide it.
And I don't know if this really applies to all the Roys, but I remember reading a study years ago that said people that curse the most or have the most crass language are more truthful.
So,
that's why.
Because you say what you gotta say.
Because he is, in terms of language, he is the most crass of them all.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe that speaks to the truth that he speaks.
Yeah, definitely.
But let us talk about Rhea out. So much to unpack here. My favorite part of this whole thing about Rhea is that Rhea came in like a shark. She knew she was gonna play the Roys. At one point, she decided to make that choice, and that she would come to the top of this company. And she just realized this is a whole mess and the Roys are too much for her. And she doesn't want anything. She just wants to walk the F away.
Wow.
You think she just realized that?
Yeah, I think she thought she could handle the Roys. I thought she thinks she could have swam in those waters and be, not only swim in the waters, she could be the top shark and outmaneuver them. But now she didn't want to swim in the waters because these sharks bite each other. And I think she's out.
Mm. That's interesting. I think with Rhea, I was expecting her to somehow get out of the company, but not with empty-handed. I really didn't expect that because, I mean, there's just a lot of issues that come out of that. Like, oh, you just stepped down from a sinking ship, and, like, who's going to hire you after that?
She's done. Because every time she makes a play...
But she thinks that's a better choice than staying there because of the danger. And the lying line you said earlier, the fact that he can just lie to your face with the most confidence and still be appealing, like, that is scary. And that's how she caught him, because she knew that he had called him that Mo before.
A close friend.
So it was really smart move for her to confirm that fear in that conversation.
Because that was the first time we've ever heard of true apology from Logan when he said, I misspoke. And it was like, okay, I'm talking to somebody.
I misspoke.
Like, no, friend, colleague, best friend. And I'm like, no, you... So I think that was important, but I don't think she's going to leave empty-handed. And I think the issue right now is Rhea is doing what Shiv was doing before, in my opinion. It got too personal. And right now it's gotten too personal for her. And I just genuinely believe that Rhea knew. I don't think that she was aloof to any of the things that were going on in that company. I think that she was very strategic about it. But the moment that she realized that she was out of the loop and there was like such a history that she can never make up for was when Shiv kind of overplayed her hand a little bit, you know, and it's like, you're the best person for us to see right now. Right. In those moments, it's like, I know you don't believe that and I know you don't trust that.
Yeah,
so it's like... It goes back because, you know, Logan said they hid it from me, right? So I think the first thing she's thinking is, who hid it from you? So that's why she said, intentionally or unintentionally, I was played out as a scapegoat. So it's like...
Well, I think she knows... I think Shiv didn't overplay her hand. I think that was great. I think Shiv was just giving her the Shiv.
She
was like letting her know, good one, because you angled for this and we let you get it and now you're falling. But I really think she wants out of there. Because remember when we met Rhea Jarrell? She was just a connector, and she was in with a good family. That Nan was nice. But every scheme that Rhea Jarrell got her deeper and deeper in with the Roys, and it's just like she said, there's no bottom to this. I can't see the bottom anymore. Like, at least before I thought there was a line that you wouldn't cross, but now I know that there's a molester, that you guys were referring to him openly and did nothing. So I think she's right. I think she's perturbed by the level they'll go to. And then we had Shiv talking out the sexual, you know, the victim
right.
from testifying. I think that perturbed Rhea as well.
I think actually Rhea's feelings right now for me kind of have an underlining of what Shiv might be feeling deep inside. Even when she was saying, you know, I don't trust my father, blah, blah, blah. You know, of course we think, oh, that was a tactic. But again, I think it's weaponizing honesty. Yeah. The same way we're so easily, like you said, people who are honest, just say what you have in your mind. I think that was a really important moment for Shiv. So I think the way Rhea is feeling is an undertone of how, like, Shiv is actually going to end up feeling at the end of the day, because it comes back to corporation and morality. Like, where is the line? And that's a bigger issue in our world today.
And I think Shiv is feeling that because she had some silent moments. She never voiced it, but she looks like she was perturbed by getting Kira not to testify. She looked like she had a problem with doing that.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if Shiv will be up to snuff for taking over this company, if those are the things she's going to have to do and be responsible for. Or did you feel that, or do you think that, Ryan?
That she felt uncomfortable having to do that?
To what she did to Kira.
I couldn't get a full read on that. I thought that was actually the most interesting scene in this episode. Because to a certain degree, what Shiv was saying, she's being very truthful. Mm-hmm. She was using truth as a weapon there. And she was saying, you know, I'm out for myself right now. Yeah. I'm talking to you to better my position.
Yeah.
But I did believe there was some truth to what she was saying with the whole idea that, hey, if you call these guys out, you let the world know what they did, you're going to get them. They're going to get their comeuppance, jail, whatever. It's going to be exposed, but your life is going to be severely impacted. And that's something that I don't really know if we've seen play out on a TV show before.
Yeah.
And we've seen it been play out in real life. Yeah. We don't know the full extent, though. And when she's just saying, like, you know, tombstone, obituary, first and last line, it's going to be this. This is what your grandparents are going to know you as. Vacation. You're going to need to move out of your house. Like, it's going to really impact your life, and you're not going to make out with that much money. You're going to get a book deal. You're going to get some TV spot interviews, but it's all going to fade away. You're going to be famous for 2 days, and people will forget and move on. Whereas with this, you can make a deal with us, essentially working with them,
and you
get a couple mil, and they still get the shaft.
I don't know if restitution for a sexual assault is, like, looked at in those terms.
Of course not. Yeah, what she was saying. Like,
but I think what she was saying is used to keep victims silent. I don't think that's a positive. I think she was going to that victim playbook of, I'm going to keep you silent by scaring you about what's going to happen. But I'm not going to focus on the positive that will come from you telling your story, the other woman you might save, to, you know, or the release or feeling that you might actually feel better, though you don't have extra millions. But you'll probably still get the millions, because, you know, you'll probably still be able to get those millions regardless.
Right, but what I'm saying is she used, exactly, she hyped up the negatives more than the positives, which is using the truth as a weapon.
But
so,
I like,
so arguing that she doesn't have the comeuppance to run the company, I think that this was an example that she does.
Exactly. I have to second that, because I think that instead of it being a moment where she was feeling uncomfortable, I think it was one of the strongest moments we've seen from her. Every little thing, from taking off her shoes to walk to, like, no, seriously, that was a humanizing moment. It's like, okay, we're just girls here talking, sitting down, having that conversation. And I think the most important part is when she said, can I trust you? No, you can't. That was the most honest moment we could have. So I feel like on one, absolutely.
I think that was
honesty is a weapon.
I think that
no. Can I trust you? If she would have said yes, anybody, you could walk away from that situation and be like, man, can I really trust that she's a Roy? But to say no, you cannot trust anyone in this moment. You can only listen.
I thought I thought she said no because she knew that was the only answer that this lady would trust. So
true,
she had
but
to
it's
give
also the truth.
But I will say,
it's also sort of true.
It's also the truth, though. Everything she said was true. How do we know if we don't? How do we know that Shiv doesn't really intend to make heads roll?
I think there's. Let me put it this way. I think there's a difference. Then
that's what I'm telling you. Shiv is having a moral compass now. She's like, you know what?
I think Shiv is thinking that might help fix her moral compass, but she knows what she's doing right now is wrong. And I'll say, because what I saw was when she left the car from Rhea, Rhea said, you don't have to do this, you know. Mm. That was like, to me, that was a sister-sister moment. That was like, you don't have to go out and tell this other female she can't testify right now. And then Shiv said, but I do. Like, but she had a moment.
It's her
family.
She
said, but I have to do it. It's my family. But then even when she comes back to Logan and Logan said, "You did good, kid," and gave her a kiss, she just had a look on her face like, what I did wasn't good.
Yeah, I think, honestly, why couldn't that be a powerful moment for her as well? As a powerful woman deciding, like, you know, I'm going to run this company. I'm going to play the long role. This can be delayed gratification. And I'm going to figure out the best way to do it. There are a lot of ways that she could have intimidated that witness. But the way that she chose, I'm not... The question is not if she intimidated the witness. Okay, but that's not the question.
Okay,
it's about the how behind it and the intent. I would argue, we can look back on this episode, yeah, many episodes from now, if... for any reason, Shiv is going to turn away from Logan.
Yeah.
It was at this moment where she's decided, you know what? The things that I'm saying to this witness, I actually believe. And I want to take our company a different way. This is my family name. I genuinely believe that. I think this is the beginning of Shiv trying to decide, with or without Logan, I'm going to run this company. And I'm going to run it in a way that I see fit.
I think it's disturbing because with Rhea, she realized... not only that this bad stuff's been happening in the company, but it's how closely related it is to Logan. The fact that, this molester was a close friend.
Yeah, and you have to realize, it's not just it's, like, yeah.
He couldn't even answer the question of, like, were you there when any of these things happened? I'm not going to justify that. It's a yes or no question.
And what's egregious is that it's not just, you know, there was one incident and we covered it. It was known through the company. They called him Mo. Like, and so the negligence to have someone for years that everyone's calling Mo and not go, wait, is he actually molesting like young ladies that were putting him on a ship they can't escape from?
It's not so negligent. They genuinely like walk away from situations that they don't want to deal with.
No, but I mean, like, it's negligent for like maybe someone like Tom who maybe didn't have firsthand knowledge. But if you know everybody's calling him Mo and they don't call it to his face, like, y'all should look into whether or not he's actually molesting people.
Oh, totally.
And I think for Rhea, that was just like, this is like this.
this is too much.
Cover-ups aren't like that. I mean, an incident happens, you cover up one thing, but y'all kept this guy around. So it was almost like the Epstein thing. You know, you guys enabled him. You guys furthered this. And so I think that was Ray was just like, this is crazy.
But I think if they had to start asking those questions about if he really wasn't molested, they'd have to start asking the questions about all of the things that happened there. From the human furniture to every single aspect. These people are not, they're not living in this. No, I don't negate anything you just said. I absolutely agree. Mm. I'm just saying, this is a situation where we all know what was going on. I think everyone in the company knew what was going on. They didn't ask or investigate if he was a molester or not because they already knew the answer and did not want to deal with that reality. That's what I'm saying.
Mm. Yeah, I think the people that were responsible for investigating did, but I think there are other people in the company that just called him Mo and no one said, hey, like, shouldn't we be looking at this more seriously? Do you know what I mean? I think it will. So, but
oh my gosh,
we're all just it's a lot. It's a lot.
It's really nuts.
We got to get into our news and predictions.
Do we want to do the special segments real quick?
Oh yeah.
Oh okay. Well, sorry. News first.
Yeah.
News first. Cool. We'll start with our news.
AfterBuzz TV. We got it.
All right. First off, Kenneth Lonergan.
Yeah.
Famous playwright, film director. He did Manchester by the Sea, Margaret. Really awesome writer. He's a huge fan of this show. Yeah. And this week, IndieWire took this article that he wrote, this op-ed about how fascinated he is with the character of Roman, and that Roman, played by Kieran Culkin, is his favorite character on the show because of his attitude, and that he's so dangerous in that how much he doesn't give a crap.
Yeah.
And that is the best thing about him, and also his undoing, the worst thing about him, and how that makes for such an interesting character that hasn't really been portrayed as well as anyone except for Kieran Culkin on screen. He's done the best job at that. And I think that's so fascinating to hear someone who's like one of the most well-renowned playwrights, directors, commenting on his performance. So I just want to give that a quick shout out. So cool. This show is catching on like wildfire.
Yeah.
At the end of last week's episode, we even had James Gunn, director of Guardians of the Galaxy, the upcoming The Suicide Squad. This is his favorite show on TV right now. All these big-time filmmakers and directors are really hopping on the Succession bandwagon. So we're just shouting them out like that. Another thing, this is a funny video we found. Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, wait, we have a tweet up right here. This is a tweet that I saw yesterday. It says, all the scenes between Jerry and Roman are like this year's Phantom Thread. I think this is so funny. Phantom Thread, Daniel Day-Lewis, last year, PTA film. Just a really unique, dominant relationship. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing in this season of Succession. And this is one of the funniest videos I've seen on Twitter. If we could get the sound, J-Lo, that would be amazing. Basically, we got... We got Kermit the Frog dancing to the Succession theme.
The theme song was actually done by Nicholas Brittle. We love that song so much that we were having a full-blown moment. I think he's brilliant. But, you know, I appreciate you for telling us all of that.
Yeah, this is really important. I mean, he composed Moonlight.
Yeah, he actually was nominated for an Oscar for Moonlight. That's for
score.
Sure.
We just need like a Succession score album.
Yeah.
Do they have one out?
I mean, I think
there must be some kind of soundtrack. Yeah, there's a soundtrack for sure.
And I think that, like we said, I think this goes up with one of the best opening songs in an HBO show.
Absolutely.
Game of Thrones. It's that good.
Yeah, it's that good.
So that was this week's news.
You know, it's really good when you're just listening to it in the car driving home from work. You're like, what?
A little inspiration, right?
Yeah, but I just wanted to touch on something that you said. I absolutely agree, and I think that there's definitely a bigger issue here with the women being silenced and just the culture, and we've been unraveling with the time that we're in right now. But I do feel like there are many ways to kill a rat.
I feel like what we're seeing in this culture is these women dealing with that, but also not having the time to, like, you know, in real, we process and we sit back, but there's also hearings happening and things that need to take place. So they deal with it, but then they don't get enough time to necessarily process it, and we'll process it later, and then we'll get a prediction to see how those pan out.
Yeah.
But of course, we've got to go to our flex moment where we talk about a character and the moment they sort of boss up, and this show's got tons of moments.
It had so many.
Yes. What do you guys have?
I think we just talked about it. It was Shiv talking to the victim.
See, to me, that wasn't the boss moment.
What was your flex moment?
It's her using that honest... Her using most of some truths, using selective truths as a weapon, and just really cunningly sort of flexing in that, here's a possible future if you go through with this. And yeah, it's messed up. It's really messed up. But I just think that was... Not many people could do that. Only Shiv... as a character would probably be one of the characters that could pull that off. So I thought that was a major flex moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought the way Shiv pulled it off, like, I didn't agree with the whole premise.
Yeah, completely. With the premise of it, of course.
But watching her from sitting on that bench and like, how do I get this girl to even have a conversation with me? You know, and Ray's not even here. Yeah, I thought that was amazing.
Ray didn't even show up.
Yeah.
I definitely also wrote that as my flex moment. I think it was really when she looked at Ray and was like, you know, this is my family. Yeah. I think the exact line was, you know, that's my family's company. If she's compelling, that's on me. So I think that was a really important moment. It was a flex moment. I obviously don't agree with the premise of it either, but I think it was one of the times where I personally have been crying for Shiv to just kind of like come back into who she is as a political, you know, analyst, where she's like, you know, this is what she does for a living. Yeah. So it's like, at the end of the day, the optics are the optics. You need to deal with them head on. And I'm so glad to see Rhea have that moment. Another flex moment for me was definitely Logan Roy saying, I don't have to watch this. I paid 50 people to watch this. I should not have to watch this. I was like, oh my goodness. And then the third flex moment was like 5 mil, when they were talking about 5 mil. You're like, 5 mil?
You can't do that anymore.
You can't even retire with five mil.
Retire
I was just like, oh my God, I can't relate.
Not worth working.
I was like, that was like the entire flex on like, you can't, like literally Succession flex. Like, you guys can watch it, but you're in, but not out.
I love that. Yeah, yeah. You can't, what is it? You're not going to go to work. But I loved Rhea. I thought she, when she left,
walking away,
when she said, I can't see the bottom of the pool, and I don't know if you care about anything.
Yeah.
Because she's like, Logan Roy, I haven't seen you. One thing that you were like, oh, here's the line. We can't touch that.
Second time this season, someone's just walked away from him at the end of the episode, and he's shouting their name.
Yeah.
Really powerful
stuff.
Oh,
yeah, Nan has walked away. Marcia. You know, Logan's losing some people.
He really is.
I agree. And what you just said is really important, because also, like, even with his relationship, when Rhea first met, you know, Marcia, she was like, oh, you picked somebody your own. It's different. You know what I mean? You picked somebody your own age, and maybe she had some respect for that relationship, but how easily she was able to kind of like get between that. I'm sure that's like an underlining factor into that bottom.
What's going on with Marcia?
Where is she? I'm asking Marcia for her every episode. She's the smartest person.
But now we got to get into our Savage line.
Savage.
Oh my gosh. We should just pull out the script or the screenplay.
I mean, the show is so well written. There's so many great lines. It's hard to pick one sometimes.
You guys have any?
Want to go first?
Sure. I think for me, some of the Savage lines that we saw in the episode was just kind of like saying, you know, we have to kill Bill. I think that was an immediate savage line. And I think for Greg to say, I walked away from $5 million. And when he actually said that, I called my mom and she's going to give me $5 million anyway. The reason I thought that was such savagery is because I've always thought that he's very calculating and him and his mom are always kind of in cahoots.
Yeah.
So I feel like for a lot of times when we see Greg being reactive, I think that was a situation where, okay, he already knew what his game plan was. I want to see more of Greg kind of playing chess and being able
Greg's
to be...
Greg's not there yet.
He's not there. That's why I want to see more of it. I want to see more of it. So I was happy to see that.
Yeah. Sometimes a simple route, though, is the best route. Like, I think Greg is, like, simple and keeps it kind of within the buoys. Doesn't try to go too far with his plans.
That's
and sometimes
true.
That's just the way to go and to get to where you're going.
Being in the moment.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. I think... So... I had one. This was in response to after probably another flex moment when Kendall just drops the mic on the senator, saying like, "You have it out for my family."
Yeah.
So then it cuts to I think their control room, the 50 people he's paying to watch it, and he goes, "They call Bill a meth head Santa because he so rarely delivers." Oh my goodness,
that was good.
Incredible.
That was incredible. That was incredible.
And then I got one more. This might be yours though, because I think we all wrote this one down.
We did. I was also trying to like pass over it, but say it anyway.
Roman's getting it's a hostage situation, they're like, you know, we got a meeting. You're gonna be fine. This isn't. There's nothing to be worried about. And he's like, what does that rhyme with? It rhymes with your.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm probably gonna use that one.
That was interesting, but that was also one of those savage moments for him because it was like his comeback, right? So it's like, look what Tom did. He threatened to break my legs. He tried all these things happened. So it was like a moment of retribution, but didn't last long.
I had a couple savage lines. I did like it was. It's not a courthouse; it's a stage. I like that.
That was a good one.
That
actually.
Recognition of what's actually happening.
Great one.
Of course, eat
that's
those.
Also problematic though.
It's really problematic.
Very problematic. Yeah. A little uncomfortable because that's so real.
And then I loved. If we're gonna kill Bill, I don't want to see Bill.
That was another good one.
I think I had. And this was just good advice. Where Shiv was talking to Kira, and she says, listen to everyone and make an assessment.
That's right.
Yeah, so don't take what I'm saying for truth or don't take the other side, but just listen to everybody, take it all in, and then you decide what's best for yourself.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So
yeah, there's so many good lines.
I just think the reason this show is so successful is just, again, like almost like you said, in the moment, it's not too much, it's not too little, it's just very much like step by step, this is what it is, this is the reality of it. It feels very real and not overly dramatic. Yeah, it's just very real.
Okay, sorry. I just read someone from the chat who put a savage line, and this wasn't, someone didn't say this. This was one of the lines from the emails of Tom's. Can't make a Tomlet without breaking a few Gregs.
That was a great one.
And you sent this email 60 times.
60 times. You know the difference between just 2 hours.
I still can't believe Greg?
He needs therapy.
I still can't believe they asked Tom who Greg was. He was like, no.
Nope. He was like, no. Literally, when Tom came back in, I think he made a really funny comment. Guys, Shaka was like, if I was Jim, I'd be like, I want a divorce.
Yeah, that was divorce time.
I want a divorce.
Time.
Like, I can't trust you.
That's a total turnoff.
Wow. Awesome stuff for the chat, just real quick. So we have Patrice Wilcox saying, Shiv invoked the selfish nature in the victim when she told her to be for herself.
That's right.
The victim wanted to help everyone, and Shiv encouraged her to only be out for herself.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting.
And I think
it's an interesting situation.
And I think in the long run, that actually won't help herself. I think she would have felt better if she gets her story out and does feel like she's helping other victims and helping. At least that's what I've gathered from what I've heard.
You're probably right.
So,
but that's also, to me, it sounds like Shiv, you know, sometimes you're giving people advice and then just as you're talking, you kind of like, you know what? I need to take this advice.
That too, yeah. But let us get into our predictions.
Predictions. I'm really curious about Marsha.
We'll
get her next week.
We have to.
It's the finale.
They're
like
all on
we have
one boat too. You notice they're all on the cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a great setting.
We didn't talk about the random senator being like, "I've been on a cruise with my family and I loved it." I was like, "Okay, that was the moment where everything changed." I was like, Who paid him? Well, like, well, did I think he come from?
Well, smirk. Well, have you been watching these hearings? I think they were just kind of showing the partisanship that you can have.
No, and
so whenever
real.
It's like a, you know, when I watch these hearings, whenever it's like a Republican senator, they just start talking about how much they like the guy, and then when it's a Democrat, they talk about all the evils and vice versa. So I think they were just showing that juxtaposition, but that they had turned the tide in giving their side enough to protect them. You know what I mean? They weren't. Everything wasn't on the table that, you know, everyone had to repudiate them. There's enough that their side can go, okay, we can still stand by you.
That's fair, but it also felt like a moment of opportunity, you know, in the long run. I want to have a drink with you guys. Okay, what are you auditioning for?
But that's how it works. That's how it works.
That's the reality. It's like, remember that moment.
Yeah.
Who will be the blood sacrifice?
The blood sacrifice.
You know, well, we saw the preview, so I guess, yeah, because I was thinking it was going to be Roman. I thought the story of the hostage situation, it, like, they wouldn't sacrifice him on purpose, but I thought they would, like, you know. But yes, I don't know.
That preview's a red herring, man. Yeah. It can't be Logan. It can't be.
Can't?
I can't.
It can't?
Can't. Only God can touch him.
What do you think?
I have a few people on my list.
Okay.
The easiest person would be Tom. That's like the easiest person.
That's not blood.
And that's the issue.
Yeah.
So I feel like because that would be the easiest person, I definitely see it really could be Logan.
You think it's gonna be Logan?
It really could be Logan because he would need to step away from it enough to give the illusion.
And he might be able
that
to still...
something has changed, but he could still control everything.
Or retain a minority share or something like that.
That would be a very smart play, which has been done in real life.
But, I mean, if we're talking about blood sacrifice, though, Greg's hands are on the cookie jar.
But he's not...
He's blood. Ooh. And his hand is in the cookie jar.
How is it not Connor?
No... Oh, that's another person. Did you guys see the moment where they were like, con hands?
Yeah.
Con hands. He was like, can I use that? Sit down.
Yeah.
So you think, but he would be the easy pick. It's just he's not close enough to the company.
There's no.
That's what you think.
Yeah, I mean, to rescue the company,
it needs to be somebody of value. It needs to be like a Jerry. But Jerry would not be satisfactory.
Because people are going to want to see a Roy fall.
Exactly.
That's why I think it's Greg.
The reason I don't think it's Greg is because Greg is, like you said, he's always been in the moment, right? He's not so rich that he doesn't think about all these different things. He has what he needs.
He can scapegoat Tom, but that's it.
That'd be a cliffhanger.
The only person Greg gets to is Tom. Because Greg didn't do anything else for the family.
But he still has the videos. He still has everything else. Like, when they were burning... He has the evidence. He's the one who has the evidence.
But it was at Tom's... It's all Tom. So Greg is the perfect person. Because he's the family. His fingerprints are on it. And...
Greg.
I don't know. I think if it's between Greg and Tom, it's still Tom. Because the way he was saying it's a blood sacrifice, Siobhan was like,
how tragic would it... I know we have to go, but how tragic would it be if it was Kendall?
It could be Kendall because we haven't seen the money thing come back. We haven't seen a lot of things.
It's only Kendall.
Okay, last person. Everybody call one. Who is it?
Kendall. Don't feel good about it.
Shiv, because she leaves on her own, because she's not comfortable. Shiv has a moral discomfort, so she goes.
That's what we predicted.
I'm definitely
going to
go with Logan.
Mm. Wow, love it.
Well, guys, this has been fun. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Guys, where can they find you on social media?
You can find me at Thelmy on Instagram and Per Shocker's Request on Thelmy MD on Twitter as well.
You guys can find me at Ryan Nilsson underscore, and we're going to be tweeting at all the cast of Succession, including Greg. We want you to call in, man. But yes. Guys, please go on iTunes, give us a review, we'll shout you out.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong. See you guys next week.
We're here for you.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.